You are listening to Gut Checks. We're giving you access to stories of hope and inspiration, where we've all had to dig deep and face the challenges of life head on every day. I'm your host, Paul Weigel, an 11-year cancer survivor, 6-time Ironman triathlete, and most importantly, a dad to an awesome teenage daughter. Join me as we explore the power of perseverance while finding and clinging to the joy in life, no matter the odds. All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Gut Checks, the stories of hope and inspiration and power and perseverance. Gosh, I'm so delighted here to have Mike Riley, the voice of Iron Man, Stridot Chief Motivational Officer, author of Finding My Voice, which includes Tales from Iron Man, the World's Greatest Event. As I was saying to Mike a few minutes ago, I've got my own personal signed copy. And as you can see over Mike's shoulder, he's got that listed there too. And Mike, it really is such an honor to have you here today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, we've got a couple different audiences here, Mike. First, I'm going to address the Ironman community, and then some for those people who may not know you. For those in the Ironman community, obviously, you know, Mike, your dream really is about hearing his voice and celebrating your finish of the 140.6 mile race. And for those of you who don't know Mike, let me read a little bit from his biography. Mike has done on-site announcing and television for running and triathlon events worldwide since the 70s. So you probably started that when you were like 6 or 7 years old.
Oh, good. I was going to say 11. So you're good.
Okay.
You're a good man.
So we've got that figured out. Yes. And he's placed his microphone in his hands at over 1,000 endurance events. He's known as the voice of Iron Man, and he's called the Iron Man World Championships in Hawaii for 33 years. He's the only person who's been inducted into the Iron Man Hall of Fame, the Running USA Hall of Fame, and the USA Triathlon Hall of Fame. Mike has called 214 World Ironman races worldwide with his phrase, and it'll be hard for me not to tear up when I say this, "You are an Ironman."
Yes, you are, Paul.
Over 500,000 of us have heard Mike say that. And they really are the four greatest words in sports. And Mike, I can't tell you how much those words meant to me at different times. You won't remember this, but actually 8 years ago, you had a contest on Facebook. It wasn't even a contest, but you said, "Hey, if you've got stories of people who've overcome tremendous things and been Ironman, put in a little bio and you would call and leave a voice message." And there was one day that this phone call came up from somewhere in California and I didn't know who it was. And then I thought, wait, no way could it possibly be. And then to hear your voice message at the end, was something I played just hundreds, if not thousands of times. So just to hear that was great. So back to Mike's bio here for a second. Mike and his wife Rose, who's run a marathon, they live in Poway, California, which is just a little bit outside of San Diego, right?
Yeah, it's Poway.
Poway. Got you. Okay. Poway. And he has a daughter, Erin, and a son, Andy, grandsons, Graham and Leo. Do you have anybody else as part of your little tribe that you've got there?
We have my sons and daughter-in-law have a baby coming in July, so there'll be a third grandchild.
Congratulations. One thing that I have not mentioned on this is that as we are rolling out my book, Iron Dad, that Mike and I are in the process of talking through, that we'll probably be reading the book as part of the Audible version. So really encourage people to be part of that. And I mentioned already that I also have got this awesome photo of the two of us a couple of years ago. Anyway, 214 Ironman triathlons, it's a lot, Mike. As participants, we always know and we say, wow, I want to hear Mike do this. But how did you even get involved in doing these announcements and doing the insane, recognizing people as they cross the finish line?
Well, firstly, I always tell people, well, I'm Irish and I'm full of you-know-what, so getting on a microphone was always pretty easy. But I announced a lot of running events and triathlons in Southern California, you know, way back in the day. And then in 1989, I was asked to come over to Kona to be an assistant announcer because they had a head announcer. Mm-hmm. And I was going to do the race that year, so I was training for it. And I was a little apprehensive. I said, you know what? I got my hotel, I got my flight. I want to do the race. Well, they just kept, you know, convincing me, and then I said, you know, I can always do the race. Well, that was 33 years in a row where I could have always done the race. But you know what? I always felt, even though I worked out and trained like the athletes do, and I trained with a lot of my buddies who were doing Ironman, so I was out there with them a long time. But the thing is, my Ironman was being on the microphone. I couldn't see myself. Once I started, I couldn't really see myself off it. And so it just kept going on and on year after year. And new races would come in, like Lake Placid in 99. And, you know, I do 24 in a row of those. Wisconsin comes in. So when you say 214, it seems daunting. Sometimes when I think about it, but they're already in the past. So they're already gone. And it happened. But I don't know how I did it for so long and with such long days. I think it was just because the passion I have for the event and the athletes. It's probably it is as simple as that.
Well, it's obviously not simple. I mean, you're for what you do, it's 19 hours that you're involved in a race. And could you kind of talk through the process of what that day is like for you? Because I can imagine you're not getting any sleep, that you are maybe as nervous as so many of the participants.
Well, I always thought about sleep as a commodity I could have when I'm on the plane going home or when I get home. So at the race,
okay,
there wasn't a whole lot of sleep. The night before, I'd wake up probably, I never set an alarm. I never had to set an alarm. So I'd wake up at 3:34 and then start meandering down to the site and welcoming the athletes into transition at 5, telling them what's going on for the day. Make sure you do this, make sure you do that. Make sure you put your bags here or there, you know, the whole deal. Mm-hmm. And then moving over to the swim start and getting them all corralled in so they can get into the water. And that's when I really wanted to give the encouragement that I know I would want if I was standing there, because nerves were just coming out of people's ears. They're so nervous at that time. And I see it in their faces. So I don't know, about 10 years ago, I went down right to the start of the swim as athletes were walking in, and I'd high five everybody. And next thing you know, I started getting a lot of these hugs, and people would come up and go, Mike, I need a hug. Dude, I don't know about this. I go, you'll be fine, and I'll see you at the finish line. I would tell everybody, I'll see you at the finish line. And they'd go, yes. And I go, you promise? And they'd say, yes. And I go, don't be breaking promises, you know? So I just would. Yeah, and so many people written me, oh my gosh, you high-fived me at the start and it settled me down and got me going. So that's a big part of the day, because it sets the tone. It sets, you know, when the race starts on time and everybody gets into the water in good fashion, and the rest of their day is going to roll out fine. Sure, things can happen, but that beginning of the day. And then, you know, I just start going through the day and bring them out of the water. Watch them head out on their bike, and then have a hot corner maybe halfway through the bike and call them through there, and then bring them off the bike and then have a hot corner maybe halfway on the run or when they come out of transition, talking to them there. It just went on and on. And then, you know, about 3 o'clock, I'd have to get to the finish line and go, okay, here we go. It's funny. I'd go to the finish line after all day working and doing my deal. I shouldn't say work, because I never called it work. It was more than that. It was better than that. So I would get to the finish line and just say to myself, all right, baby, here we go. Rock and roll. Now we begin, you know, because bringing the pros in and bringing the age groupers in till that 17 hour mark, the midnight hour, it was special. I was blessed and honored to be able to be the one to recognize the accomplishments of people that so many of them went through hell to even get to the start line, let alone that finish. And I just wanted to make sure they were taken care of. And that's what I do. I just wanted to take care of everybody and make them happier, maybe, than they are.
Well, you certainly did that for me.
Good.
Certainly. When I've done a few of my, I've done six. And as I've done the six Ironman, I've had both my hips replaced. I'm a cancer survivor. I've had 12 surgeries. I'm duct taped and super glued together more than you can imagine. And where you're saying that people have gone through hell to get there, each Ironman for me finishing has been a celebration. And getting to the to your point of being calm and relaxed, of where you have given high fives and you have recognized us as we've gotten in, has made it just a transformative experience. So thank you for that. And it, and I don't know if people say that to you as much. You've called and you've talked to hundreds of thousands, as you've said, you are an Ironman. Do you have one that's your most favorite?
Yes, absolutely. It's the last chapter of my book, chapter 15.
Yeah, could you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, I've had the honor to call a lot of people into the finish line. And when you get to call someone you know, a friend or a relative of a friend, and they tell you about them, or somebody maybe I grew up with, which I've called people in that I've grown up with. And it's just so cool to do. And sons and daughters of friends that do Ironmans. But when in 2014, my son, who played minor league baseball, decided to become an Ironman, I thought about that a lot before. And I trained with him, and he got a tri bike and did the whole deal. And on race day, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I hope I can hold it together. I mean, I'm bringing my boy in. He was, what, 2 or 3 years old when I started announcing Ironmans. And
yeah,
he and my daughter have been around that life, and me leaving and coming back, and them going to Kona and going to races. But now he's a participant. He's one of the many that I have the honor to be able to bring through the finish line. So he did Ironman Arizona, and when he was coming to the finish line, I said to Tom Zebart, my announcer working with me, I said, Tommy, if somebody's coming close to Andy, sorry, I'm not going to get that guy or that woman, because I'm going to make sure I get my boy. He goes, oh, yeah. And somebody did. They came in right in the chute. Tom got him, because I went down to greet him. And as he was running towards me, I did it all and called him an Ironman, and my wife was standing next to me with my daughter. My wife had the medal. She put it around his neck. My daughter had the Mylar blanket. It was a cold night. Wrapped it around his shoulders. The three were hugging, and then I hugged, and then somebody was coming in, so I brought him in. And the three of them just kind of turned around and walked away from me. I'm going, okay, that's it. There we go. And something I had never done before. They were about 10 feet behind me, you know, heading to the back of the chute area to take care of them. And I just yelled it out one more time. I said to everybody, I said, yeah, I don't do this, but I'm doing it now. I hope you forgive me. I said, Andy Reilly, you are an Ironman for the second time at the finish line. And this is what I got. They're walking away. He didn't even turn around. He goes like this, puts his thumb up in the air. I see it from behind. I go, okay. And, you know, he went 11 and a half hours. So
wow.
I went back to the stage and go, all right, here we go. Come on, keep going. Let's go.
Right. So, you just had to reset and keep going for several more. 11 and a half hours is a great time.
He was the first Ironman. Yeah, it was pretty darn good.
That's really amazing. Well, you had mentioned your book, and boy, it has been so inspirational to me. And there are so many different stories that you've got in it that you've talked about. And the same with your podcast, too, of people who've really overcome adversity in so many different ways. Are there, and I'm sure we could spend hours talking about your greatest memories, but are there any others that really jump out for you? In these, whether it's in your book or podcast or your different times?
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, it's amazing, Paul. I'll be talking to someone and they'll remind me, they go, Mike, remember when? I go, oh my gosh, I remember that. I mean, I can't remember everything, but when I'm reminded of the date and the year and what happened, I go, oh, I remember that. Are you kidding me? I had a woman send me a message today, and she said in the message, Mike, I don't know if you remember me, but I finished the Ironman, and you brought me in. You were down below. I think it was Mont Tremblant. Yeah, it was Ironman Mont Tremblant up in Canada. And as I called her an Ironman and pointed to her, I was standing right next to her. She looks at me and she screams and yells, "You bet your ass I am." And
I awesome.
I started laughing. And she sent me a message this morning about something. I haven't talked to her probably since then. And she goes, "I don't remember me." And she told me, I wrote back, I remember that vividly. I was so funny. You know,
that's awesome.
So, matter of fact, I had a guest on my podcast today. It's not out yet. We recorded it. He's in my book, Brian Boyle. He was an 18-year-old high school swimmer that was coming home from swim practice and got crushed by a garbage truck. He died 8 times on the operating table. As a matter of fact, one surgeon came into the room and said to his colleague, the surgeon working on him, said, "Why are you working on that cadaver?" And wow. The surgeon said, "As long as he's got a heartbeat, I'm putting him back together." And, you know, it's a well-documented story about Brian Boyle. And he became like a son to me because I put myself, whether my son or daughter, that if that happened to them, gosh, what would I do as a parent? And that was 2004. That dude came to Kona in 2007 and did that race as an NBC story. He went through 36 transfusions. He lost 100 pounds. He shouldn't even be alive. And the son of a gun, if 3 years later, he didn't do an Ironman. And this year he's doing his 7th Ironman in Ironman, Maryland. So
that's incredible.
He's in my book. I haven't done a lot of people from my book on the podcast, a few, but Brian is just, a dear young man, and I loved his parents, met his parents. I know him very well now. And when I met Brian, he was just this young kid, and now he's a father with 3 children. So,
wow.
I love how my life moves on in a good way for him. Perfect.
Well, and life moves on in a good way for so many different people. And I know for me and for so many others how much Ironman has transformed our lives. And I certainly would say the same thing that, when I was first diagnosed with cancer, one of the very first things I was saying to doctors was, "Great, how soon is it going to be before I can start training again?"
Yeah.
And that it was, I made a point that it was 6 months after I finished chemotherapy that I was at a starting line, and that it was incredibly important to me. So, I know one of the things I'd read was where you're saying you remember so many of these things. I think I read that you've got a journal for all of the different races too. So that, how many journals do you have if you've done all of these different races?
I've got it. The journal is a journal where I may only have, let me put my glasses on. I may only have 2 lines about the race, but this right here, this is the original piece of paper when I started it. If you can believe that. And
oh, wow.
On it, I had, somebody said to me, "Hey, how many races have you done? We're at Ironman Florida." I go, let's add them up. Pulled out a piece of paper and, okay, there's Hawaii, Australia, New Zealand, 37. At that time I started this, it was 37. I started this in 2002. So from then on, I just started putting the date, what happened, what Ironman New Zealand 2010, my notes, so much better than 2009. Great weather, ceremonies were perfect, finish line was epic, one of the top 5 ever of my career. The last 3 hours absolutely rocked. I love the Kiwis. I mean, stuff, and I have that
beautiful
every race. Yeah, I handwrite it. I probably should, you know, get it in the cloud. Trust me, if a house would start on fire, that'd go out with my passport. You
know, it might be even more important than your passport, right? Because you can always replace the passport.
That can't be replaced. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, that's incredible. Well, I know that, I mean, you've done so many, and you and I were talking just beforehand that you have slowed down how many races you're doing. And I think we both said that you're not retired. In fact, you're doing length classes celebrating the 25th. But you've shifted and you've got so many other things going on. You've got Stridot and the chief motivational officer. Could you say a little bit about that? Because I was really intrigued. What does that, you're the motivational officer for hundreds of thousands already. What does it mean to be part of that with Stridot?
Well, the Stridot training system is huge with their online apps and how people can check their training and the coaches can put it in there. And part of it is they have different levels. One level is called Pegasus, one's Unicorn, and they attain those different levels by certain workouts or doing certain races. Well, I went into the studio and recorded about 200 voiceovers for those apps. So when people do get to a different level, they may hear, "Congratulations, you made the Pegasus level. I cannot wait to see you make a unicorn. Keep it up. Have a great one out there and ride safe." You know, I did like 200 different ones. And so what I do now is I get so many messages from the app, "Mike, you talked to me today on the app because I went to a different level with my training." And Stridot is now the official training partner of Ironman, which is fantastic. But they just have a incredible training system. Coaches like Mark Allen. It's funny, Mark Allen said to me when I first started talking to him about it, he goes, "Mike, if I'd have had this type of training system and coaching when I was racing," he goes, "I'd have won Kona 8-9 times, not 6. I mean, that's just...
That's a heck of a testament.
And it's making life very easy for coaches so that they can really key in on all aspects of the athlete's life. What's going on today? How old are you? What's going on at work? Everything's put in. And Jeff Boer, the creator of Stridot, was creating artificial intelligence 7-8 years ago with this. And it is now perfected it to where it's an incredible system. So I love being a part of their team. And they actually said to me, "You know, Mike, we'd love to accentuate your voice and have your voice part of the business and keep it going." I said, "Great. I don't have to travel to 14 Ironman events a year, you know."
Right. Although a lot fewer frequent flyer miles that you're getting there.
Yeah, I know. That's a tough one. That's a tough one.
Well, that's just incredible. And that's Stridot training system. I know that I will certainly, as I'm preparing for Ironman California this fall.
Check it out.
For sure. I'm probably a little bit behind. Well, let's pivot a little bit. I want to be super sensitive to your time. As we've talked a little bit about, this podcast is called Gut Checks. And because it's, for me, as a colon cancer survivor, there are different aspects to it. But gut checks can be hard conversations with your doctor, or as an Ironman triathlete, we have gut checks every day. What does gut checks mean to you?
Oh, gosh. Gut check means to me reassessing yourself, making sure you've got things in order. And gut check is honesty. That's what it means to me. You know, if you do a true gut check of yourself, you can maybe mislead the truth or lie to other people, but you can't do that to yourself. That's what gut check means. I mean, some people may, tell you something like they told you, Paul, about having cancer, and you know, it's an instant gut check, like, what the heck is going on here? And I've had so many friends and family, same thing happened. So I'm a positive person. I want gut check to be a positive thing. In other words, if I failed at something today, you got to do a gut check and go, well, that's on me. I'm the cause of my own experience. How can I improve that and not fail on it again?
That's beautiful. Thank you. Just thinking a little bit, you mentioned about my experience of being diagnosed, and one of the big things that I'm trying to increase awareness and advocacy of is the importance of getting screened and the importance of having colonoscopies. And I know that you and I, and it's actually kind of funny for me to, even though I've been having these discussions now for 12 years, here I am saying, "Mike Riley, can you tell me about your cancer experience or your screening experience?" And and you had mentioned to me that you had, and I'm not asking for anything personal, but maybe could you say something? So for anybody who might be hesitant about getting screened or having those conversations with their doctors, what would you say to them?
Wake up, get it done. Don't be a baby. Don't, you know, just because you think something might be uncomfortable or you think the doctor may tell you something you don't want to hear. Trust me, you want to hear those words, even if you don't want to hear them. And I think it's a matter of men being lazy. You know, if you need to get your first colonoscopy at 60 or 50 or whatever it is, and I'm an advocate of Dr. Peter Attia with his Medicine 3.0, and he wrote a book called Outlive on actually getting a colonoscopy if it's in your family earlier, 30 years old, 40 years old. So get it done. I mean, the problem with triathletes and runners, and I'm saying this in a good way, is we think we're infallible because our heart rate in the morning is at 42 because we got a 80-mile ride in and popped off a 6-mile run afterwards because we work out, because we feel we eat correctly and have a good diet. You know what? That's great. But there could be something going on inside, whether it's hereditary, whether it's just happening, that you do not know about. And it can, you know, whether you get your heart checked or your colon or whatever it may be, you got to get it done. I say to you, if you haven't done it, make the appointment today or tomorrow. Call up the doctor and make the appointment. Don't be one that figures you can just get by it. And because sometimes when the news comes, it could be too late and it's on you. You got to be proactive about your life, not wait for things to happen and react to them. So be proactive and get tested today.
Today. Well, I think you bring up a great point as Ironman triathletes that we are always fighting injuries and we are always pushing through and we're always discounting whether it's that pulled hamstring or the upset stomach that, oh, we're going to power through it. And I know I was in that case that I had symptoms. I had done an Ironman triathlon, 5 marathons, and that it was only before it was almost too late that I was at that. So. Well, thank you, Mike. I so much appreciate your time today. One thing I want to say to you is, Mike Riley, you are an Iron Man. So thank you so much for your time today. Definitely everybody, when you get a chance, pick up Mike's book. It is great. Check out Tri-Dot Training Systems and take care of your health. So,
and if you do buy my book, you can send me a message at mike@mikeriley.net, and I'll tell you where you can send it, and I'll sign it and send it back to you. So I have books coming in all week long to my address and signing them and sending them back. So I love doing that.
Beautiful. Well, thank you. Thank you, Mike. Everybody, Mike Riley, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found some inspiration on the power of perseverance while finding and clinging to the joy in life, no matter the odds. If you feel you learned something new with this podcast today, share it with others. To learn more and continue this conversation, join us at irondadbook.com and make sure to sign up for our newsletter and free gift. I'm looking forward to sharing more with you soon. Take care.